So they don't become a prize in the first.
You know what we're just talking about with, I tell Andy to leave that up there, we're just talking about with the kids, what we're talking about today, God and suffering, and how those two things go together. And basically this is one of those, what you call an apologetics sermon, and maybe this is for you. Maybe this is something you've been struggling with. Maybe this is something that will help strengthen your faith. And maybe this is something that you have a friend. You've been talking to a friend and who doesn't believe, and this is their area of struggle. About pain and suffering in God, and how do those things go together? And some suffering kind of disprove God. C.S. Lewis, who is a great person as far as writing, he's really good with apologetics, he wrote this. Not many years ago, when I was an atheist, if anyone had asked me, why do you not believe in God, my reply would have come like this. Look at the universe in which we live. By far the greatest part of it is empty space, cold and dark. On Earth, life is so arranged that all forms of it can live only by preying on one another. In higher forms of life, there appears a quality called consciousness, which enables creatures to suffer pain. The creatures cause pain by being born, live by inflicting pain, and in pain they mostly die. Human beings also have reason, which enables them to foresee their pain, causing immense mental suffering. Reason also enables the humans to inflict immensely more pain on each other and on the irrational creatures. This power they have exploited to the full. Their history is largely a record of crime, war, disease, and terror. Furthermore, the universe one day will cease to be. Every race that comes into being in any part of the universe is doomed. All stories will come to nothing. All life will turn out in the end to have been transitory and a senseless contortion upon the idiotic face of infinite matter. If you ask me to believe that this is the work of a benevolent and omnipotent spirit, I reply that all the evidence points in the opposite direction. So happy Sunday, everybody. Good way to start, isn't it? Say that to bum you out, but it's a really important question. Does the evidence of suffering, the existence of suffering and pain and evil prove that God does not exist? And that's a huge question for people in our day, and oftentimes a personal question. If we don't face it head on, it can leave a lot of room for doubt. And interestingly, rather than trying to sweep this issue under the rug, the Bible addresses this issue head on, over and over and over. The very direct expressions of anguish and confusion and rage about suffering and pain. In fact, in the wisdom literature, in Psalms and Job and Ecclesiastes, is more about this than anything else. The book of Job is all about suffering. In fact, Job 5:7, maybe I didn't go here. It says, human beings are born for trouble as surely as sparks fly upward. It says, and then Psalms like Psalm 22 are all about that. It's a psalm that, these are the words that Jesus quoted on the cross. In Psalm 22, it says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Oh my God, I cry out by day, you do not answer. I cry by night, I am not settled. And then verse 7 and 8 says, all who see me mock me, they hurl insults at me, they shake their heads at me. He trusts in the Lord, let the Lord rescue him. And the Bible is full of this stuff. It's full of talking about pain and anguish and people suffering. In the ancient world, people suffered. In the ancient world, people expected to suffer. One out of every five children died before they were 1 year old. And that was just the world they lived in. In ancient world, half the children did not reach the age of 10. And some of us in here have, it's a couple 10-year-olds up here this morning. So they knew a lot more about suffering than we tend to in our day. The Greek Stoics said that what life was about in that day was developing the kind of character that can bear suffering without complaining. You just resign yourself to what's happening. a Greek Stoic named Epictetus, he wrote something. He said, "What harm is there while you are kissing your child at bed at night to murmur softly, 'Tomorrow you will die'?" Now, if I was Epictetus, I'd have a little problem with that kind of bedtime liturgy. But that was, you know, basically say that's the world we live in. What's wrong with that? And parents at that time loved and they hurt and they cried like we do and they're confused like we are. But it didn't cause them to think there's no God, because it wasn't this expectation that everything should be perfect. The difference in our day is not that we suffer more, right? With technology and medicine and anesthesia and other things, we're actually in better shape in terms of suffering than any people have ever been. What's different is that we assume that the universe should exist for our benefit, for us. We assume that self, and not faith, not God, not community or anything else, but self is the highest value, and that we're smart enough that we should be able to figure the universe out, and really we ought to be able to control it. So people in our day, when we experience suffering, isn't just this horrible problem, but it's proof that God cannot exist. And that's what I want to look at. I want to look at five different things, observations. They don't explain why they're suffering the way it is right now, but challenge the assumption that the existence of pain and suffering proves faith in God is irrational. So, number one, the mere existence of pain does not prove the absence of love. And I'm sorry, on your sheets, I don't know which word was left out, but you can probably figure it out. And we see this in everyday life all the time. A surgeon, right, will allow pain to bring healing. Now, does the surgeon want to inflict pain? No. But there's good on the other side. A therapist will actually focus a client on sad memories to bring about growth. Does the therapist want to inflict pain? No. But there's good on the other side. If you've ever been a parent and your kid is being noisy, selfish, irritating, whining, driving you crazy, you might discipline them. Do you want to inflict pain? Correct answer is no. Because I got the nose last time. All right. Just worrying me a little bit. All right. But we all know about this with parents, that parenting and love and pain, that's all a package deal altogether. When Andrew, the firstborn, was less than a year old, we took him to the doctor, and he got his first shot. I'll never forget, it was just, you know, it was awful. Because up to that moment, everything would be done. When he arrived, I just texted him, and I wanted to put him in a bubble and stuff. And I was worried because Aim was still coaching at that time, and having a basketball practices, and I described the bubble I was going to do to protect him, shield him, comfort him, take care of him. You know, he trusts us, and I feel so bad, so we go to the doctor, and he gets out this giant needle and he shoves it into his tender pink little skin, and his eyes got really big, and he's just looking up at me like, you know, how could you do this to me? You know, and I picked him up in my arms and I said, "Oh, Andrew, this is mommy's idea. I will never ever do this to you." Right, exactly. It's mommy's idea. And so the Bible doesn't teach that all of pain and suffering is God disciplining somebody. Christians get this messed up sometimes. There's actually another religious doctrine out there called karma. You've probably heard of that. Kind of built around this idea of you're experiencing pain right now. There's probably payback for something you did in the past existence or something like that. That's not in the Bible. And there's no simple formula about everybody experiencing pain or experiencing good or suffering because they deserve it. In fact, in the Bible, Jesus says that God causes the sun to rise on the good and the evil. He causes the rain to fall on the good and the evil. Suffering comes to everybody. Good comes to everybody. But the existence of pain does not prove the absence of or purpose of love. Number two, the existence of evil is the result of the fall, not part of God's original creation. And this is one of the teachings of the Bible, is that there's a way things are supposed to be. And we're going to come back to this in a minute. It's a really important idea. Things are supposed to be. That doesn't include pain and suffering and evil. The pain and suffering and evil came about because people were free to choose sin. Another C.S. Lewis quote here. He said, "And free will is what has made evil." Free will is what has made evil possible. Why then did God give them free will? Because free will, though it makes evil possible, is also the only thing that makes possible any love or goodness or joy worth having. A world of automata, of creatures that work like machines, would hardly be worth creating. There's actually a movie about this a little while ago. Some of you remember. I didn't see it, but I know the gist of it from watching the commercials and trailers. But anybody ever hear of, see this, Stepford Wives? Maybe you've heard of it. Stepford Wives, it was the suburb where real-life wives actually get replaced by identical-looking robot wives. All right, so they don't have free will, right? And you think about this for a moment. If you're a husband, imagine this actually happened. Your wife being replaced by a robot. Would you want that? You know, somebody that doesn't have free will? Would you want your real life, challenging, sometimes difficult, flesh and bone wife replaced by a robotic version of herself, was always smiling, always cooking your favorite meals, laughing at your favorite jokes, scheduling your favorite events, doing whatever she needed to do to make you happy? Would you want that? Don't answer. Don't say it. The correct answer is no. And it's not possible anyway, so you're not doing yourself any favors by saying yes. But it means that people have to have the freedom to choose, because there being such a thing as people, right? Which is kind of neat when you think about it, but it means that there has to be freedom to choose, and the freedom to choose evil. Now, some people think, well, couldn't God create a world where just evil just didn't exist? People are free to choose, but you would always choose good. No, you can't have that both ways. You can't have freedom and determinism. It's like saying, couldn't God create a square circle. You know, it's not because it's outside of a limitation on God, it's just the nature of God to be able to have free will and also everything be already determined ahead of time. Number three, if there's no God, why should we be outraged when bad things happen to people? And that's a kind of a subtle point. And again, I love C.S. Lewis. So he says, "My argument against God was that the universe seemed so cruel and unjust. But how had I got this idea of just and unjust? A man does not call a line crooked unless he had some idea of a straight line." In other words, the argument against God based on pain and suffering is that if there's pain and suffering in the world, it wouldn't be just. And it wouldn't be right for God to make a world like that. But this whole notion of justice implies that there's a transcendent standard that's above everything. It's not just about my preference or your preference. If the world is nothing but a machine, if it's just a bunch of jiggling atoms, where did this idea come from that there's a way things are supposed to be? You know, this transcendent standard. I tune into Sports Center. I work and I listen to Sports Talk Radio. Maybe you've heard this week about Donald Sterling. This guy, a Los Angeles Clippers owner, and he made a bunch of racist remarks and things like that, and all these people are coming out and saying, well, he didn't break any laws, but what he did was morally wrong. And I just want to ask the question real loud, says who? Because if you're going to say that, then you've got to say that there's a transcendent being that creates a moral law that doesn't just come from nowhere. And of course, speaking of the other side, Donald Sterling, Martin Luther King Jr., he wrote this in a letter from Birmingham jail. It's a piece of moral and spiritual truth that he wrote while embracing suffering for the sake of God's justice. This is part of what he writes. He's writing about, you know what a just law is. He says, "A just law is a man-made code that squares with moral law or the law of God." So Martin Luther King is saying, if there is no higher law, there will be no way to tell what justice is. Right, the whole civil rights movement, the whole movement for justice and reconciliation racially, was built on this foundation of a higher law, just rooted in God's law. Now, on the other hand, German philosopher and atheist, I'm going to say it wrong, one of you going to tell me, Friedrich Nietzsche?
Nietzsche.
All right, Nietzsche. He heard about a lethal tidal wave in Java. He responded, 200,000 people wiped out at a single stroke. How magnificent. So as different as their views are, Martin Luther King and Nietzsche, you know, agreed on this on one point. If there's no God, no higher divine law, then injustice is perfectly natural. So abandoning belief in God doesn't help with the problem of suffering at all. And then number four, in Jesus, we meet a God who will defeat suffering by suffering himself. And this is a staggering thing because there's no other God like Jesus. We could do a whole message just around the sufferings of Jesus. He was born in a little manger, having to leave his home, flee an infanticide by Herod, live in Egypt, face anti-Semitism there, live in a poor family, working as an obscure craftsman, lose his dad, go through ministry where he wept when his friend Lazarus died. He wept over Jerusalem when he was hungry, he was thirsty, he was tired. When they cut him, he bled. They rejected him. His friends abandoned him. One of his disciples betrayed him. When they hung him, he died. And he's called a man of sorrows. The writer of Hebrews 5, verse 7 says, during the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with loud cries and tears. You know, I don't often think about Jesus' life being marked by loud cries and tears. But in the next verse, Hebrews 5, 8 says, Son though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered. I'm going to show you a video here, and maybe you can start to bring up that first one, of somebody who knows all about walking with God and suffering. And some of you know this person as well. Named Dan Paternoster. And I went to church for many years with Dan. Was elder with him over in Fowlerville. In fact, we're talking about Andrew when he was little, when he was a baby, pushing him in a stroller downtown Fowlerville. He came riding up with his wife on a two-seater bike and stopped us and told us all about church planning, this church planning conference. We need to go to it. And it would be great. And people even are there with babies. And we were real polite and like this. And we're like, no way, as soon as he left. But, you know, he kept talking to us about it. A few years ago, in fact, we were away on vacation. Some of you were watching our dog and had to take him to the vet because he wasn't doing well. And it was Dan that was, you know, looked over him when he died there. In fact, right before we started doing the church plant, here, he took me up on a plane. He's a pilot. Took me up a plane and flew us all around the Danville area, and I got to videotape a lot of the, you know, landmarks of Danville from the sky. I'd love to do it again now, but I know the area so much better. But shortly after, when Henry went into him, when he died, he's a veterinarian, he was hit by a car riding his bike. Just last week, there was an article about him in the Lancet State Journal. But this this video you're going to see is made almost a year ago. And we'll just talk a little bit about his suffering, his story. So, Andy, can we do that?
There are many things in memory that we take for granted. And there are many things which we lose from our memory and think that's normal.
I was on my way to work one morning, and I was coming out of Fowlerville. It was a very sunny morning. I was going through areas that were shade and then sun and shade and then sun, and I seen in the distance that there was a gentleman riding his bike.
As I was riding to work, I was hit by a car from behind.
I saw the mangled bicycle, and I knew in my heart of hearts what had happened and that it was Dan there. I remember holding his hands were ice cold, and he was moaning. I just, in Dan's face, I could say, don't you go anywhere, you're not alone. Don't you leave us until Nancy can see you.
I thought maybe he had a broken leg. So I left the doctor's office, and they took us in a separate waiting room, I guess, for people that they don't think the person is going to make it. They put us in there, a small waiting room, off of the ER with a hospital chaplain. And then they had me go in and identify him. And all I saw was his left arm, and I knew it was him.
just seeing him, hearing him, feeling how cold he was, I did not envision him in my heart of hearts making it to the hospital.
It was a long, it's been a long, hard 9-10 months now. We've gone through learning to talk, learning to eat, learning to walk, learning who people are. When Dan was at Mary Free Bed and inpatient rehab, it was discovered that there might be some internal damages. And at that point, they did some surgery at St. Mary's Hospital and found that he had a mass in his bladder. And the doctor, I still remember him coming out to me and saying, he's 85% sure that it was cancer. In the midst of all this, we're going through rehab with him. I was diagnosed with cancer. Pray for our girls. They don't like calls from mom. I need just good news to tell them one of these times, and I'm right next week will be the good news.
As I look back, it's easy for me to say that God has been very evident. I have had opportunities to talk about our Lord with people that I never would have met if it wasn't for my injury. And I've had people who have watched me live, who have come to the Lord.
It's amazing how God used this tragedy in so many ways. The orchestration of God is incredible.
I got a hold of Pastor Mark, and Pastor Mark said that he'd be very glad to talk to me. The first time that I talked to him, he had made a point to go to see Dan before that and tell Dan he was coming to see me.
Because that was within the first 24 hours or so that Dan was alert. He had come out of the coma that he was in. And during those moments in the hospital room, I was able to talk to Dan for the very first time and have him respond. And as I shared with him, one of the things that I knew about Dan was just Dan's heart for people and his heart for Christ. I obviously was not understanding what he was saying, so he physically grabbed a hold of my shirt and pulled me right down to his face. He mouthed over and over again the words, "I forgive her."
Just that right there, just knowing that after what I had done, when I hit him, he was in such bad condition, very critical condition, and he could actually tell me that he forgave me, and I figured that if he could forgive me for that, that there was definitely a God up there.
The woman who hit Dan, she did give her life to Christ. And it's been an incredible thing to be part of that. And it's going on every single day. He just keeps, it's almost like a circular pattern. It just keeps coming back.
And it can be tempting to pass blame. But it has been my privilege in this. When I came to consciousness, I asked my wife to pray for the forgiveness and the well-being of the person who had hit me.
Brain injury, death, it changes people.
And I'm 56 now, and I can see some different perspectives because I used to go to work early and work until my clients were cared for as best I could. My wife, Nancy, had many days where she was a mom without much help from me. My daughters, who I love very much, had many days with little input from their dad.
One of the hardest things is that people think that they understand the situation and they understand what you've been through. But unless you've been through it, you really don't understand. And there's definite times where you say, God, why? Why did this happen to my husband? Why did it happen to my family? And he doesn't remember any of the accident. He doesn't remember any of the pain. But yet we still have that. And people need time to say, God, why? You need to work it out with God and not be judged based on whether or not they're having a good day or a bad day. So give people space. Let them deal with God.
I'll do it. gonna jump. Well, my ski's slipping off.
Just remember, never snow block, okay?
No snow from house.
If it's straight, you'll be fine.
Okay. Straight. Do you go faster on the in run?
A little bit.
A little bit?
Yeah.
Is it any steeper, do you think? Not
same,
much.
Same steepness, it's just longer.
Well, just longer. Just longer, just a bigger 20, that's all.
Yep. That's
all. Bigger 20. I got it.
Maybe it's you. And it's all you can do just to keep yourself out of bed this morning and come. Now, today, we come to the Man of Sorrows. We bring all of our tears, all our grief, all of our wasting away, all of our disappointments to the foot of this cross, the place of ultimate suffering that's become, by the grace of a suffering God, the place of ultimate hope. We don't seek comfort, but we seek a cross. Heavenly Father, great physician, good shepherd, crucified carpenter, risen, I just ask that you would visit every breaking heart right now with comfort and hope. Would you give to every man and every woman in this room the strength to endure whatever it is that they have to bear? God, would you make this church a community where nobody hides and nobody lives in secret or in a dark corner, but there's light and love? God, until that day, when we're on the other side and our arms are lifted in this eternal triumph and we embrace each other and you just say light and momentary, and we understand what that means. God, until then, we live, God, in your love. Pray this all in your name, Jesus.